Brother Jason has asked that we would read from Genesis chapter 45. We'll read verses 1 through 15. Genesis chapter 45, beginning at verse 1. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, "Cause every man to go out from me." And there stood no man with him while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, "I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live?" And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said unto his brethren, "Come near to me, I pray you." And they came near. And he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years, in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Haste ye, and go up to my father, and say unto him, Thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not. And thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, and thou shalt be near unto me, thou, and thy children, and thy children's children, and thy flocks, and thy herds, and all that thou hast. And there will I nourish thee, for yet there are 5 years of famine, lest thou, and thy household, and all that thou hast, come to poverty. And behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. And ye shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt, and of all that ye have seen, and ye shall haste and bring down my father hither. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brethren and wept upon them, and after that his brethren talked with him. Let's all kneel together in prayer.
Good morning, brothers and sisters. It's good to be with you this morning as we look together into to God's Word. And certainly we received a challenge already this morning through the songs that we sang, "I'll be a friend to Jesus." That's quite a challenge for each of us to live that out in our everyday lives. And certainly this weekend helps us to focus our thoughts, remind us what He's done for each and every one of us. This morning, we want to talk about a familiar story, and I hope that the meaning, the power of that story is not lost in its familiarity. We all know the story of Joseph and his coat of many colors. It's so familiar to us. We heard it since we were small. But this morning, I want to look at Joseph's life as a model of forgiveness. Last night, we considered the scriptural command to be reconciled, and we looked at a number of New Testament texts around that thought of forgiveness and reconciliation. And this morning, we want instead to look at a specific example. Sometimes examples can encourage us more than just a command or an exhortation. And so we want to look at this example together this morning. We'll consider four different steps in Joseph's life, or stages in Joseph's life. They are forgiveness needed, forgiveness concealed, forgiveness revealed, and finally, forgiveness affirmed. As the story of Joseph's life unfolds back in Genesis 37, we see quickly that forgiveness was needed. There were at least three separate events that happened to Joseph that could have caused him to become bitter and certainly required him to forgive. In Genesis 37, Joseph's brothers are in Dothan, far from home, and they see a lone figure approaching in the distance. They'd recognize that ridiculous coat anywhere, and their hatred turned into action. We don't know which of them saw Joseph first, but someone said to the others, "Look, the master of dreams is coming." Someone suggested that they kill Joseph and pretend that a wild animal had done it. The others agreed. That would put an end to his dreams. Reuben, the oldest, convinced them instead to throw Joseph into a nearby pit. As Joseph approached, the brothers grabbed him, they ripped off his coat, and they threw a confused, and I expect terrified, Joseph into a dry well. Though the text doesn't say it here, we later read that Joseph had begged for mercy, but they would hear nothing of it. Later, afflicted by their guilty consciences, the brothers would remember his cries of anguish. Right now, though, they were feeling pretty good. So good, in fact, that they sat down for lunch. In the distance, they see a caravan approaching, and Judah speaks up. Why not sell Joseph to these traitors? They would be rid of him forever, and they wouldn't have to deal with the guilt of having killed him. This was the best of both worlds, Judah reasons. After all, he is our brother. I can only imagine how alone and how betrayed Joseph must have felt at that point. For many of us, when the world hurts us, we turn to our family for protection and comfort. But Joseph's family had a picnic after agreeing to let him die in the bottom of a dry well. Most of us will never experience anything like Joseph did. Some of you have. Some of us may in the future. How could Joseph ever forgive his brothers for what they did to him? As Joseph experienced this and later injustices, we see the need that forgiveness was needed. Later, the false accusations that came at him from Potiphar's wife, followed by wrongful imprisonment, and then being forgotten by the butler. All these things could have caused Joseph to grow bitter. He could have harbored hostility and an unforgiving spirit toward his brothers, Potiphar's wife, even the butler. Clearly, Joseph needed to forgive his brothers who had wronged him. But as I studied this account of Joseph, I asked myself, when did he forgive them? Though the Bible does not tell us for certain, I believe that Joseph forgave rather quickly. I think there are clues in the text that tell us that. Each time Joseph experienced some injustice, we see after that that God was with him and blessed him. If Joseph had allowed bitterness and forgiveness to enter his life and remain there, I do not believe God would have prospered him as he did. Consider Genesis 39:2-3 and 21-22. we won't turn there for time, but both those references tell us that God blessed and prospered Joseph in his circumstance. That's the first lesson, or this is the first lesson that we need to learn from Joseph's life. When someone sins against us, we too need to forgive right away. We must not wait for the other person to come to us. God himself extends forgiveness to us before we seek it, and he expects us to respond in the same way toward others. Second lesson, I believe that Joseph did not allow bitterness to keep him from serving God wherever he was. Hebrews 12:15 cautions us, looking diligently lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Now we jump ahead in Joseph's life about 22 years from the time he was sold into slavery. I call this part of the story forgiveness concealed. I believe that Joseph had already forgiven his brothers, but he tests them before he reveals his identity to them. All through the story of Joseph, we see the sovereignty of God. In spite of man's sin, God orchestrates events to accomplish his purposes. Joseph's brothers had sold him into slavery, thinking they would never hear from him again. The last time they saw him, he was being led toward Egypt as a slave. Now, in the opening verses of Genesis 42, we're 2 years into the famine. Jacob and his sons are hungry and having a family meeting. And he asked the boys, "Why do you sit here looking at each other? I've heard there's food in Egypt. Go and get some. That's obviously my paraphrase, but we know the account. The 10 brothers arrive in Egypt and appear before Joseph. He recognizes them. He likely was clean-shaven, dressed like an Egyptian, and even spoke to them through an interpreter. He remembers the dreams he had years before. Humanly speaking, he is in a position of absolute power over them. He could have sent them away hungry. He could have imprisoned or even killed them. It would have been easy for him to retaliate. But Joseph had not allowed bitterness or unforgiveness in his heart. And as when he was tempted by Potiphar's wife, he chose instead to walk in integrity before God. Since Joseph's brothers do not recognize him, he's able to test them. He accuses them of being spies and interrogates them about their family situation. After putting them in ward for 3 days, Joseph tells them how they can prove themselves. One brother will remain in Egypt while the others carry food home for their families. When they return, their youngest brother must be with them to prove that they are not spies. Have Joseph's brothers changed? Can he trust them now? Is Jacob really still alive? Will the brothers convince Jacob to let Benjamin return to Egypt with them so Joseph can see him? Still, Joseph keeps his identity a secret, and the test continues. Joseph has the brothers' corn money placed back in the mouths of their sacks for them to find later and sends them away. Again, the food runs low in Canaan. Judah reasons with Jacob and finally pledges himself as insurance of Benjamin's safe return. When the brothers arrive in Egypt the second time, instead of appearing before the ruler, they are sent to his house and showing great hospitality. Certainly none of that could have made any sense to them, but after a while, they were able to relax. They were provided with as much grain as they could carry and allowed to spend the night. Early the next morning, they were sent away, all 11 of them. I have to imagine they breathed a sigh of relief as they left the city toward home. But then everything changed. The steward came racing toward them, demanding to know why they would return evil for good. One of you stole my master's cup. And the suspense builds as one bag at a time he searches, starting with Reuben and ending with Benjamin. There in Benjamin's bag is the cup. The brothers are hopelessly trapped. Again, they appear before the Egyptian ruler. He demands to know why they would do such a thing. Judah, who had promised Benjamin safe return, pleads with Joseph for Benjamin's release and offers to be kept in his place so that his father Jacob will not die of grief. Joseph now knows that he can trust his brothers. They are not the same men who betrayed him years before, plotted to kill him years before. He had created a situation in which they would be tempted severely to give up another brother to slavery, but they do not. They pass that test. I had to ask myself, how does Joseph's test fit in with forgiveness? It doesn't seem quite like it fits. But let's look at that briefly. Some people say that it was wrong for Joseph to test his brothers the way that he did. Maybe we would think that he hadn't even forgiven them yet because of the way that he acted. Some say he should have immediately told them who he was and expressed his forgiveness. I believe there are clues in Joseph's story in the text here in Genesis that prove even while he was conducting this test, testing them, he was seeking his brother's good. Certainly, with the power that he had, if he was trying to get even with them, he could have acted and would have acted much differently. So how should we respond when someone sins against us? Certainly, we need God's help to forgive right away. And as we think specifically about this test that Joseph tested his brothers, let's be sure that we do not have God's permission to try to teach others a lesson or to try to get even. We need, as believers, instead to turn the other cheek, to forgive again and again, even for the same offense. We see that in Matthew 18:22. Forgiving means not only that we refrain from returning evil, but that we actively seek the other person's good, as Joseph did. And Romans 12:20 talks about that. There are many different little misunderstandings and offenses that can occur in our daily interaction with others that may not even warrant or do not even warrant a second thought. In those cases, we should immediately forgive and forget them, remembering the times when we most likely have done something similar to another person. Sometimes, though, people hurt us greatly, as we see here in the story of Joseph. The sin of Joseph's brothers against him would never be forgotten. It changed the entire course of his life, but it could be forgiven. In a situation like that, we need God's help to forgive. We need God's help to respond with love and kindness instead of bitterness and retaliation. Sometimes the scars will be there for life. But by the grace of God, we can choose not to act based on the scars. I believe we see that in Joseph's life. Forgiveness means not allowing the wrong done by the other person to influence my attitude, my words, or my actions toward him or her. So is it okay for us to test those who offend us as Joseph did? Depending on how someone may have hurt us, it may be very difficult for us to trust them again. It may take a long time for our trust to be restored. And I believe that's what Joseph's test was all about. I believe he had forgiven his brothers, but he wasn't sure yet if he could trust them. If we find ourselves in a similar situation, for sure we need to ask God for wisdom to know what to do. And we need to be sure that if we do feel a need to test someone to understand their heart, that it's for the purpose of rebuilding our own trust and not forgetting even or trying to punish the person. Judah's offer to be a slave in Benjamin's place is the climax of this test by Joseph. Joseph can see clearly now that his brothers have changed. He can trust them. And he cannot restrain his emotions anymore. And we saw that there in the verses that our brother Jeff read for us. Joseph could not refrain himself before them all. I call this section, or this part of the story, forgiveness revealed. It's difficult to imagine how the brothers must have been feeling at this point. They were afraid for their lives, I expect. And suddenly this hard Egyptian ruler orders all of his servants out of the room and starts to weep uncontrollably. What a scene it must have been. Maybe they even thought they were dealing with some kind of a madman that would act in this way. Genesis 45, verse 3, the first part of the verse says, "And Joseph said unto his brothers, I am Joseph. Does my father yet live?" And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. Somehow I doubt that troubled really captures what they were feeling at that moment. But Joseph speaks to them with words of forgiveness and reassurance. He doesn't pretend that nothing happened by avoiding the subject. No, he acknowledges the way that they had sinned against him, but immediately he expresses his forgiveness to them and urges them to forgive themselves. He comforts them by pointing to the good that God was able to bring in spite of the evil that they had done. Why did Joseph forgive his brothers? Why should we forgive those who sin against us? I believe the reason that's brought out in the story of Joseph is the sovereignty of God. Joseph was able to look back and see the good that God was able to bring from that situation, even though his brothers had meant it for evil and it had done evil, God was able to bring something good from it, or in spite of it. God is sovereign. Even man's sin cannot thwart his purposes. We see that in the garden. We see it at the cross. God is sovereign, even when we don't understand why things are happening. I believe Joseph experienced firsthand the truth expressed in Romans 8:28. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. I believe that Joseph forgave his brothers on the basis of his trust in God and God's sovereignty even before things started to go well for him. And we should do the same. Today, we can be sure that God is sovereign, that he is in control, and he will work all things together for good to them that love him, even if we don't see the fulfillment of it in this life. Second, we can look back at the incredible forgiveness that God has shown to us through his Son, Jesus Christ. Like the servant in Matthew 18 that we talked about last night, we have been forgiven a debt that is greater than anyone will ever owe to us. It's only right and proper that we forgive others their lesser debts against us. There in Genesis 45, 14 and 15, what a family reunion Joseph and his brothers had. Joseph kissed each one of his brothers in turn, showing his forgiveness and his love for them in spite of what they had done. They had been separated for so many years, and I'm certain they had a lot to talk about. In the final section of the account, we see forgiveness affirmed. And that comes in Genesis 50, verses 15 to 21. We know the family moved to Egypt. The famine continued for another 5 years. 17 years go by, in fact. And then Jacob dies. Everyone mourns for him. Joseph obtains special permission to travel to Canaan to bury him. The family and a great number of Egyptians make that long trip to Canaan to bury Jacob and mourn for him. And at that time of great emotion, the brothers' guilt returns. They worry, what if Joseph only did this because of Dad? What if he tries to get even with us now? So great was their fear that Joseph would seek revenge that they sent a messenger to plead on their behalf. How did Joseph respond to all of that? The Bible says he wept when they spake unto him. Joseph was grieved because they doubted his forgiveness. Like charity, real forgiveness keeps no record of wrongs. See 1 Corinthians 13, verse 5. And verse 18 of chapter 50, it says, his brethren also went and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we be thy servants. What a sad thing it is to be forgiven and not comprehend it. Again, Joseph models for us true forgiveness as he reassures his brothers. He doesn't deny their sin, but he reminds them of the good that God was able, how God was able to turn even their sin, what they intended for evil, into something good and bring something good from it, saving their lives and the lives of many others. He assures them that he will not seek revenge. It's not his place. He says, fear not, for am I in the place of God? Even though he was the second in command in the land of Egypt, Joseph knew that judgment was God's business, and he was not about to take matters into his own hands. In verse 20 and 21, he says, but as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore, fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. I am challenged by the example of Joseph's forgiveness. He suffered so much, and yet he extended forgiveness and kindness to those who sinned against him. How is it with me? How is it with us? how do I respond to those who sin against me? I doubt that any of us are ever going to be thrown into a dry well or be sold into slavery by our siblings. Hopefully none of us will ever even experience anything close to what Joseph did. But if we do, how will we respond? I will not pretend that forgiveness is easy. You all know that. It is difficult. The British poet Alexander Hope once wrote, "To err is human, to forgive, divine." Real forgiveness is not humanly possible. It requires the work of God in us and through us. If you face the challenge of forgiving something that's unforgivable, I encourage you to meditate, as we will this weekend, on what Jesus has done to accomplish God's forgiveness for you. Read about believers who, like Joseph, have suffered incredible things and yet are able to forgive, and claim the promise of Philippians 4:13, which tells us, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." For most of us, though, the challenge will come in the little things, the stuff of everyday life. It's so easy sometimes for us to take offense at those little things and let them grow into bigger problems. The careless word, the forgotten promise, the repeated offense, and even a simple misunderstanding. Will we choose always to forgive? And as we prayed, "Lord, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors."